Much appreciation to Bodhichan Meditation Center for offering lunch. Now I have a bit more energy. You might be able to hear my voice better now. This is my meal of the day. I don't have dinner later on. And I normally don't have breakfast or have some very little bit of something. So I feel, oh, it offers such healthy food and the good energy of life. Returning to this body together with, I think, the loving heart quality that someone prepared the food with. It's very interesting to see how the quality of our mind can pervade matter. We think mind and body are so separate somehow, like mind and matter are very different things, and yet we can really feel, if we're practitioners of mindfulness of the body, then we know how quickly a single thought can cascade through the body and have so many effects at the physical level. And if we're a person with eyes, ears, then we can also tell for others. In a single moment we can see how a single thought can either age them 10 years. Haven't you seen that when somebody got bad news? And then it seemed like within a matter of seconds they looked like they became 10 or 20 years older. Such a strong impact of just, you know, just those thoughts and just those ideas upon the body. And likewise, when the person comes back in the doctor's offices and says, "Oh no, I'm sorry, that was the news from Mr. James, not the news from Mr. Jones," right? And it's not actually the bad news for you, and then like the ton of bricks has just been taken off their back, and oh, just the shift of a thought, just the shift of an idea within a fraction of a second, not to mention within just 1, 2, 3 seconds, we can see such profound impact from our thoughts. So we're going to be working with that a little bit today. Now is Sutta study time. So this is an extract from Digha Nikaya, Long Discourses of the Buddha, Sutta number 33, which is the Sangiti Sutta, translated as the recital or to be recited by the Sangha together. And it's got a bunch of different points. This is under the fours, the section on the fours, and this is for the four boundless qualities, also called the four sublime abidings, or the four divine abidings, the four Brahmaviharas. Now, many of you may have learned metta practice together with your meditation. How many have learned metta practice or Maitri Bhavana? I'm hoping some more hands will go up when I say Maitri Bhavana. How many have learned? How many practice? Yes, a couple more hands. I'm just translating into Sinhala. I learned a couple of very good words during my time in Sri Lanka, and Maitri Bhavana are two of the excellent words that I learned. That means metta bhavana, that means metta practice. So these days many times people learn this practice as taught by various teachers of Burmese Vipassana, mindfulness and insight traditions. I'd like to radiate loving kindness to first to those that they love, their most beloved one, and then out to those that they don't know, and then hopefully they get to those that they have issues with. Yes? It's actually a very important part of it, but I've heard from quite a lot of people that sometimes they have a hard enough time sending metta to those that they love and don't even get to the next part. Those that they don't know seems kind of vague. How do you do that, actually? How can you extend love to somebody that you don't even know? It seems kind of abstract and impossible. And then those that we have issues with, you know, it's almost by definition, it's impossible to do, right? How can I continue to have issues with them while I'm sending love to them? Some people can do it. Some people say it's just very hard to do. But here we have what the Buddha was teaching in terms of metta bhavana in the suttas. You may, hopefully, you have this in your hands or on your device, or you're in a position where either you already know it or you have someone next to you who is willing to share it. We're going to take a look at these now. If you have a paper, it should have Pali on one side, maybe, and then English on the other side. And so we're going to take a look at the text now. Now here, if we look at the Pali side, chatur is four. So this is with four sections, four different qualities. Here, metta, on the first line if you're looking at the Pali side, then karuna, next paragraph looking at the Pali side, mudita, next paragraph, and upeka. So these are called the four divine abidings. And if you're looking at the Pali side again, I'd like to call your attention to the next word after the dash, the ubhasa. This means to radiate, to pervade, to spread out. Yes, we might imagine then, like, you know, like being a sun or a light bulb and radiating outwards. According to this text, this radiation is meant to go both directions, both inwards and outwards. Yes, this is actually very important in this. I tell you, this last year or 2 years ago in the United States, I had a big debate with Jade Meng Tan. Often known as Meng, he's known as the Google Jolly Good Fellow. He is the one of the architects of the Google search engine, and then he's gotten kind of popular and famous. He wrote a bestseller called Search Inside Yourself, which was on the bestsellers list for a long time. And jolly good fellow that he is, he donated all the proceeds to various wonderful charities. So that's a really nice thing to do. And then a couple of years ago, we were talking about he wanted to write a joy book. He felt the joy part is very, very important for people. And he had found it so helpful himself, but he had learned about altruistic joy in terms of these qualities here. And his understanding was altruistic joy means not selfish, means you're supposed to just have joy for others, only for others, completely selfless, not for yourself at all. That actually went along really well with American thinking, I can say, having been born in the United States and growing up until a teenager, and leaving to become an anagarika, a homeless one in monastic life. That idea went really well with our largely Judeo-Christian culture of self-sacrifice, and, you know, great to have joy for others and appreciation for others, but the idea of having that for ourselves is one that can seem so risky and so dangerous in that culture that even the greatest of our early translators from Pali into English are considered so orthodox, and we think especially the German translators are like so precise and we can really trust their translation because they're so rigorous. And yet in the translation of this very part, even from the commentary and the Visuddhimagga, the great German translator actually translated all of these the same way except for the joy one, which was translated differently. That is only for others, not for oneself. But I argued with Meng, that is Jade Meng Tan, look at the Pali text, it's the same pattern for each one. He said, no, here, look, this is the great translator has clearly translated this part differently. There must be a difference in the Pali text. And we went over it, word by word, what each word means, and sure enough, it's the very same pattern repeated over and over again with regards to the metta, the loving kindness, to all as to myself, and for the compassion, also to all as to myself, and for the mudita, the appreciative joy, or earlier translated as sympathetic joy, at least for Americans. Sometimes we had a hard time understanding what sympathetic joy meant. I like appreciative joy myself. Even appreciation, sometimes translated as gladness, might even be translated as gladness here. Here translated as gladness. Can we be glad for both ourselves and others? And I'll just comment that in our American culture, I've taken a look into why we would be afraid to feel gladness for ourselves in Judeo-Christian culture, and spoken with quite a lot of people about this. And what I hear is it's because people are afraid of the danger of pride, conceit, and that if we have appreciation, if we experience joy, if we have gladness for the things that we ourselves have done, that we're in danger of falling down into egoism and pride. And in religious paths, rightly, aren't we supposed to be self-depreciating? And isn't self-depreciation actually, isn't that something that's not only there in Christianity, but aren't we supposed to be self-depreciating in Buddhism also? This question arose, right? Isn't that what non-self means? Means you're supposed to try to get rid of everything that's self or something like this. People have such ideas. I would like to say, personally, after a good number of years, maybe 40 years with this practice, now this is my 50th year of life, I feel that would be a misunderstanding of the Buddha's teaching. And clearly in this text, which I mentioned comes from the Sanghiti Sutta Nadiga Nikaya, actually it comes from many different places in the canon. All of the teachings that are there in the Sanghiti Sutta appear at least one other time, if not many times, in the suttas, in the canon. And so we find this pattern again and again. It's not aberrant, although some of the English translators, again, have translated that particular part in an aberrant way. I have a question for you now, though. With regards to gladness, with regards to joy, even like feeling in oneself happy to be here, as well as feeling happy that others are able to come, able to be here. We understand probably every single person here had an aspiration to come, and there are a lot of other people who I know had an aspiration to come but weren't able to, because this came up, that came up, the other thing came up, somehow they're not able to be here. We can think, we'll feel happy about that because the room is quite full as is. But also sorry, compassion for them. They wished to be here and they couldn't. Those of us here, we wished to be here and we could. We got lucky this time. It's our good fortune that this thing that happened, that thing that happened, the other thing that happened to the other people has not happened to us this time. We're still alive. We're still healthy enough. Our car didn't break down, or our ride didn't have some terrible problem, or need to go for sudden surgery, like like Lynn. So all of these things of anicca are there. So to feel happy for ourselves and also happy and appreciative for each other in the United States. Now, watching you, I feel like it might be easier to feel happy for yourself than it is actually to feel happy for everybody else. But I could be wrong about that. Now I see that it's spreading. Yeah. So in the United States, much easier in our training to feel happy that the others can be there than to really feel like happy and glad and comfortable about feeling happy in ourselves. That we're able to do something good without flip-flopping into either pride and self-aggrandizement or the other side into self-depreciation, even like self-abrogation. Is that a word that you know? Like beating oneself up because we think that makes us good to do that. Now, I see some people smiling and nodding about this, and hopefully the culture is changing in these regards. But I know, like, my grandma's age, even my mom's age, it was kind of, we felt, especially as women, like it's really good to beat ourselves up over things for some reason, and to practice self-denial with regards really like having appreciation in ourselves and really feeling comfortable and balanced and normal and easeful about that without going into pride and self-conceit and without going into self-depreciation. So in the US, when I talk about this, sometimes people say, but if not pride and if not self-depreciation, what else is there? Yes, really. I hear it commonly. It's like, is there a gap somewhere between these things? All I see is one or the other. All I experience is one or the other. But really, there is a gap. And it seems like many of you know it. And for you, is it a small gap or is it something wider? Is it a wide open door that's there for you every day to walk through? Or is it the broad open field of your entire life where the pride part might only appear occasionally? And be very clear, that's just that. And it's out in left field. And the self-depreciation part, maybe not at all, or maybe only very occasionally. And if it appears like, you know, look at that, that just showed up there, but not the mainstream of your life. I'm just checking. How's my accent? Are you able to understand? Okay, that's great. In Sri Lanka, easy to understand in Colombo, more difficult in Kandy. So, not exactly sure why that is, but I'm glad that it works here. And also glad for the coming of the rain. Oh. I find it wonderful to be in the forest when the rain comes. I have lots of brainwashing in that regard, having spent many happy hours, happy weeks, happy years even, in the forest in the rainy season with the rain coming down. My response is, oh, peaceful, wonderful, so good. So some joy and gladness for the land. I heard that it had been quite hot, and now we have this cool and drenching rain. Our joy and gladness can be shared not only with human beings, but other forms of life as well, yes? And not only animals, but certainly we can feel joy and gladness for nature, for the trees, living beings that are the trees, the bushes, the plants, the grasses, all of this as well. And when we see them after this, like looking so fresh and perked up, you know, a source of joy is there. If we can empathize with them and see, oh, how fresh and wonderful they're looking and how good it looks like they feel with having the rain or getting conditions that are supportive to themselves. There are so many sources for this joy around us, and as we'll be talking about later on after your lunch, also directly tapping into, unblocking and accessing them in ourselves. So for the English side of the text. Now, most of us are used to pervading forwards, yes? Looking forwards, projecting our voices forwards, and receiving also from the front. And yet, our bodies go all around, and in fact, our senses also work all around. I mean, our ears are on the side, and yet we feel like we can hear what's coming from the front, what's from behind. The sense of touch is all around our bodies, yes? And in terms of healing work for people in this path of practice, working with mindfulness and loving kindness together, it's actually quite important to be able to not only touch into the front part of the body and bring mindfulness and
bring loving kindness and compassion to the front part of the body, but also to the sides and also to the back. If we're not used to that, then it can take just a little while to turn on the senses and turn on the ability to be able to do that. Sometimes people have fear of what's at the back also, because it's not the direction that our eyes are in, or because something happened, like we were a kid and our brother or sister jumped on us from the back when we were 5 years old, or this kind of thing, and then like we got a scratch, our tooth broke or something, and then we have a feeling of fear from the back, or of what's unseen. So the pattern that we find in here, I think, is very important in these regards. So looking at the text, it says, I will abide, pervading one quarter. Now, the way that I learned this, we could think of the world like north, south, east, and west. We could even think like we're sitting on top of the world, and then one quarter would be like one of the directions. Or we can think just with regards to our bodies, wherever they're placed, and start with the front side as the first quarter. So if we think about our bodies like this, the world of our bodies, then the first quarter being in the front, can you with your arms make the area that that first quarter would cover? Okay, so for your heart light, the radiance of your heart light, then for that first quarter, spreading out like this, that's outwards, and then also for that first quarter, if you put your arms out for another moment, then inwards as well. What's the inwards motion? Yeah, so this will be the first quarter, yeah? And then for the second quarter, here, how many are right-handed? How many left-handed? So blessings on all those left-handed, blessings on all those right-handed. We're going to turn to the right and think about then the second quarter. From our bodies now. If you turn your body, it seems like then you can look in that direction and that seems good. So you can start like that just to get a sense of what you're aiming for. But it's important to be able to then come back here and then feel, like close your eyes and see almost like you're looking out in that direction. Even you can use your right arm to feel like the expanse of that area, to kind of scan the expanse of that area, yeah, and feel what it is. So that's the area. And if you can, look with your mind's eye and then also feel the sense of your body along your whole right side, all the way down your whole right side, like opening up to that direction, and able to like shine your heart light, able to beam out on the right side, and then also able to receive. And what we're going to be able to receive is the loving kindness, the compassion, the appreciative joy, and the upeka, which we'll talk more about later. So on that side. And then we're going to go, sometimes if people have a hard time with the back, good to go to the left side next and then the back. I'm going to just go around though and see how that goes for you. But just to let you know, if you don't feel like you can access the back so easily, maybe good to go to the left next. If you're left-handed, maybe good for you to start even. Not going to the right, but go to the left first, because you may be more used to like opening up and connecting through that side. But let's try to go to the back now. So we could turn around. Now you can turn around and look at what's behind you. to get a sense of what you see there in that quarter, in that area, but then come back again and see with your eyes closed if you can also then feel that, if you have a mental image of it, or if you can feel like opening up that quarter behind your back. And then with your hands also, if you can, be sure not to knock anybody behind you. Now you've looked behind, you can again. And see if you can put your hands also back and feel like the expanse of that area that's going to be that quarter that's behind you. And see if you can feel the sense of the radiance then going out your back in the direction behind you, like out to the entire world and even the whole universe, through Bodhichan Meditation Center, all the stuff here, and out to the forest and living beings there, and also the sense of being able to receive that loving kindness, compassion, appreciation, and upeka, also from the backside into the body. And see if you can get a preliminary sense of those channels from the back, the whole back of the body, up to the top of the head, down through your back and hips, and even back of your legs, even down to the ankles, being able to be open, perceptive, and able to radiate in this kind of way, because human bodies can radiate, can't they? We can see when people are dark and their light is dull or diminished or even looking like it's gone out, or when their light, their heart light, is on. And often we see that from the front side, but now we're going to be opening up the back side as well, so that all around, really our whole body, all sides, and then going to the left side also, just for a moment then, to look to the left and see what is that quarter, to put your arms there over that area so that you can feel that area that is that quarter. You can even put out your left hand and think about, like, as if you had a flashlight in your hand from your palm, like radiating out in that direction, then coming back into the left side of your body. So opened up and able to radiate, and then also able to receive kindness from the left side, compassion from the left side, able to come into the body from that side, and then coming back to center again, and also looking above. So above, opened up above, and also opened up below, with your eyes closed as if you're looking down below to the floor, and then the earth spreading out below, and then all around in all directions, and spreading outwards, and then also inwards, to all as to myself, to all as to myself. Loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, the channels opening up in all directions for us. So I'd like to invite you now, with that feeling, with that somatic sense, in as much as you've been able to experience it, now to come back and to take a look at what's here in this text. Now, this is something that the Buddha taught about for bhavana. Bhavana means to cultivate, to develop, to practice, to train in. Really means for cultivation, for development. Bhava is like life, being, becoming. And bhavana then means to apply that in a wholesome, healthy, skillful way, recognizing that according to our thoughts, according to our actions, these are what are creating our experience of life. And so then using these in a really blessed, healthy, wholesome way, sitting in the driver's seat with regards to our life somehow, or even if we don't feel like we're in the driver's seat, at least we have like voice activated control, something like this, a very good relationship with our Garmin. So really, you know, getting to know that and being conscious about what we put the gas on and when we apply the brakes, and also having the steering wheel, being conscious about the direction that we're taking and how we cultivate, how we develop our mind and our heart. Yeah, so I'm reminded here, I've seen the this Chinese character a few times. Now it's going to look backwards to you, and I don't know if I can write it the other way to face in the correct direction, but we translate it both as mind and as heart, yes, into English. And likewise for the citta in Pali, then can be translated as mind or as heart, yes. So now we're going to take a look at the text here, but for citta in the Pali, if you have it, then you see there, metta sahagatena cetasa. This cetta, this is the citta, this is the mind, this is the heart, yes? So via the mind, via the heart, in the mind, in the heart, we're talking about mind and heart qualities that pervade matter, pervade our lives, pervade our experience, that are at the basis for our emotions. So now I'm going back to the English, so you can read with me. I will abide pervading one quarter with a mind or heart imbued with loving kindness. This is the metta or maitri. Some people prefer loving friendliness and a sense of real deep heart friendship. Some people prefer to say unconditional love. Looking at the way this text develops, actually, we can really, in fact, start to talk about unconditional love, because we're not trying to attach to various conditions, qualifications, internal or external, for being loved. For being an object of love, for being an object of compassion, for being an object of appreciation. This is without qualification for ourselves and for others. So the question of whether that's deserving or not, whether we meet the criteria for it or not, no, cleared, off the table, not on board in this regard, in this cultivation, in this development of mind and heart that's being talked about here. One quarter, and then the next line with me. Likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself, I will abide, pervading the all-encompassing world with a heart or mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. I'd like to pause here for a moment. Now, I've been with Buddhism for quite a while, and surprisingly, although I used to hear about the Buddha's love and compassion, the Buddha's compassion and wisdom in terms of a real heart training in these qualities, it wasn't until I really spent good time with teachers of the Thai forest tradition of Ajahn Chah that I actually encountered this text being chanted regularly, and that I encountered this actively being cultivated and developed regularly and broadly, expansively in practice. I had already been in monastic life for a good while at that time, so it's kind of a surprise to me to find out that that Buddhism had this in it. And a few years later, then we started to get these really good English translations from Wisdom Publications of first of the Digha Nikaya, the Long Discourses by Maurice Walsh. And then you start to find, oh, it's there in the suttas. And then Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi, also I feel like somehow a bit more alive with his practice and training also. These in such comfortable, good English in the translations, and then finding these things like in the suttas again and again. How was it that we were missing that somehow? I even knew some people who had left Buddhism for Christianity because of feeling like they needed love and feeling like, you know, Buddhism was like very hard, very strong, strict practice, and all this self-denial and these kinds of things, and not really getting the love that they needed, or the the compassion is all the Buddha and great bodhisattvas, but the compassion that they needed themselves, and that they really, really needed in themselves and needed to be able to have the channels open for in relationships with others were blocked. It wasn't happening. And even leaving to go somewhere else because of that. And if we look at the Buddhist texts and the early Buddhist teachings and these practices that are there, then I felt so shocked. Like, oh, it's right here in this teaching, in the suttas, again and again. And it's not just like so appreciating the Blessed Buddha's great compassion and that of the great bodhisattvas. This is bhavana. This means we're supposed to be cultivating and developing this ourselves. Even in Theravada Buddhism, the three like bases of merit that are said to be like practice for absolutely everyone, like the very base foundational practice for everyone, dana, generosity, sila, at least with the precepts, if not much more than the precepts, for our moral integrity, for our ethics, for our virtue, and bhavana. And this is right here on the list. The Maitri or Metta bhavana is right here, like tops on the list for bhavana, for what we're being asked to cultivate and develop as foundations of merit, or like of good energy and the whole container for our path of practice, such that we can have breakthroughs and be able to hold and integrate that well when we see into the depths of the teaching, rather than having breakdowns and feeling left out in the cold somehow without the context and the heart care that we need in ourselves and with regards to each other as sangha, as community, as companions on the path, to be able to hold these things in such a healthy, excellent way in which we can integrate that deep, profound wisdom. Yes? So that's the fundamentals, the basics in the early Buddhist teaching. This is there. And yet somehow, so many places, so many times, maybe it seems like too basic. So sometimes we're missing the generosity, we're missing the ethics and the moral virtue. Sometimes we're missing these cultivation and development, opening up to and experiencing these most excellent and profound heart qualities. So people ask, with regards to metta, the loving kindness, karuna, compassion, mudita, I'm saying appreciative joy. If it's not the right translation for you, continue to translate into the word that's best for you. Sometimes people ask, are these really separate, distinct qualities? Why is it that all four are coming under the name of metta bhavana? Why is that? Now, I would say from my experience with this over time that the quality of love, even as the text says, like a mother has for her only child, if you've encountered that before, this quality, if we think about a mom who's super loving like that with her only child, or you'd say like the pure love of the child for their most beloved parent, we may or may not have experienced it, but we've still got a sense of it inside ourselves, probably. I think it's in our genes, like our genetic heritage, whether or not that's been fulfilled by other people or as active in ourselves. Still, for our parents, we have this like deep ideal. The Buddha said we look at our parents as gods, and these are called Brahmaviharas. They're called like divine, you know, qualities and abidings. And then if we don't get that unconditional love from them, looking at them as being like our gods, being like our creators in a way, we feel something's off. Sometimes even American teenager, we learn to blame our parents for that. Like, I know, you're supposed to be giving me unconditional love and compassion 100% of the time, every day, from morning until night, and I've got my scorecard here. Excuse me, this morning at 7 a.m., you were a little grouchy. I don't think that was an expression of unconditional love in the way I feel I deserve, and you should be treating me, being like a godlike parent that you're supposed to be. On my scorecard, you're not quite living up to that deity attribute. So, you know, so many of us, I think, felt like that. And then sometimes also with our kids when we get older, and then we think we're supposed to have this great love for them all the time, and yet sometimes they can be so darn annoying. And even when they're just little babies and they're crying through the night and we can't sleep for 10 days and we're going to pull our hair out, and like, we have to have some amount of these qualities not to kill them, yes? Really. And yet that kind of like full, oh honey, oh I love you so much, waking me up in the middle of the night for the 14th night straight. Oh dear, yeah. Love you so much. Oh, hope so. And yet in real human life, so hard. These things can be so hard, yeah. But that quality of love, when it really is on and active in the way that it naturally works, when it's just love, it's just love. And when there is pain, when there is crying, when there is falling down and stubbing their toe or skinning their knee, then our hearts are like, oh, oh dear. And then that love in response to pain becomes compassion. Compassion is the form of love in response to pain. External, also internal. Also internal, when we ourselves feel pain. The quality of love in response to pain, in response to difficulty, in response to hardship, compassion, yes? And for that little child, when they've fallen down and skinned their knee, and then you're holding them and they're crying, and then you're still holding them and they're like, let go, I want to go play again. Okay, you kiss them on the cheek and they're running off after a butterfly. Ha 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 ha. Really, like the weather changes so quickly. It was raining and now there's sunshine and sparkles on the leaves, right? And how quickly the kids are like that. And then you watching them running with joy, light in their eyes sparkling and running after the butterfly like this. Then if your heart is healthy and flexible, then you feel, ah, oh, joy as well. Look at them now. A minute ago they were crying and I was feeling so much compassion for them, and now I have this joy for them, yes? As they're running and delightfully playing. And that doesn't mean we know. As a parent, we know the falling down and bumping their knee or nose or head or whatever it is going to come again, right? And that also then becomes the basis of the love that is upeka. Means we know the patterns of the things, we know the joys and also the sorrows that are so natural in life at all ages, yes? And that provides a kind of a stability in mind and heart. The quality of love that can then actually really become unconditional. That quality that is able to hold absolutely everything. However it may be, whatever it may be. The greatest of love and joy, the most profound depths of sorrow and pain, able to hold all of that. And able to pass through. Able to pass through all of that. People used to make the wedding vows with each other. Come thick or thin, hell or high water, high or low, I love you through all of it. We can pass through anything and everything, right? I heard this even as a teenager in high school, and then I saw true love forever on the bathroom wall with the heart and the arrow piercing it, and then I came into that same stall the next week and it was scratched out roughly and early, and then I saw her name again with some other lovely one, true love forever with the arrow passing through. We know these things in life, how they may be, yes? But for these particular qualities, it's that kind of love that, and compassion and care that really can hold absolutely everything and pass through absolutely everything for ourselves, for each other, for our dear beloved world with all of its many living beings, all of the wonderful things that there are, all of the challenges and crises and painful and so ignorant and stupid things that may be, every single one of them, absolutely all, open up to everyone, no one blocked, no one, no thing denied, yes? And here I'm waving my hands outward, but the hand also has to wave back in to this very body. If you can, open your eyes for a moment and see what my hand is doing. It's coming from outward, the entire world and everybody, and it's coming back to this very body. Yes, this very one, this body that's sitting here, that's experienced so many joys and pains, that's been through so many things. This heart quality pervading into, I have a chance to speak Korean to one person, with at least one person able to understand today. Jabye-sun. What does it mean? Hand of compassion, hand of love and compassion. Like this, like the scanner that's able to beam into everything in the body, whether we're moving our hand or not, as we've learned with mindfulness of the body, to bring mindfulness from the head over the entire body, down into the entire body from head to foot, also with our loving kindness, with our compassion, with our joy and appreciation, and that great quality of upeka, able to touch, able to hold, able to pass through and into absolutely everything. This is to be developed, cultivated, exercised, yes? If we had a tiny muscle and we tried to pick up something very heavy, then it would shake and we wouldn't feel like we're able to. But if we start to pick it up a little bit, few times, many repetitions, 10 times, 20 times, 30 times, then we can pick up one a little bit heavier. And then also that muscle is stronger. This is like exercising our heart and our mind muscle and developing it in this regard until we are actually able to pick up and hold the things that are even the things that we consider to be the most heavy, the most weighty ones, with that steadiness and clarity and these beautiful, excellent, good qualities in heart and mind, without wavering, without shaking. Yes? So wonderful. Let's look then at the other part. Next paragraph. The love that responds to the pains that we've been talking about. I will abide. You're welcome to read with me. Pervading one quarter. Do you remember that one quarter? Can you remember that one quarter now? In your somatically remember it, like in your feeling? What is that one quarter? And then the others. Again, I will abide. Pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with compassion. Likewise the second. Likewise the third. Likewise the fourth. So above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself, I will abide, pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with compassion, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. In fact, the Buddha, the Blessed One, talked about work with these qualities as a liberation of mind, as a way of freeing the heart and mind. Yeah? I found that very interesting because, you know, it seems like If we create something in our mind, it can seem like that's just making something more, and whatever we make in our mind is like becomes an obstruction in some way. Yeah, it can seem like that. If we understand, though, actually deeply about the quality, the natural qualities and nature of the heart and mind, we can understand this differently. It's like we're tapping into something and opening it up, something that may have been blocked, that may have been distorted. If it was blocked, we're unblocking it. If it was distorting it, we're clearing it out, yes? I'll put down the mic for a moment to show you what I mean. Like, there's the things in our hearts that get so tangled up like this. It's like untangling them and then releasing them. If it were like hair that's gotten tangled, it's like, you know, untangling it and making it be able to become smooth. Smooth and able to flow freely in the natural qualities that are there, yeah? The things that bind, the things that obstruct, we find here in the last words in this paragraph, hostility and ill will. So, we're going to talk more about these later on in the afternoon and how these qualities can be brought to negativities, the things that block, the things that convolute, the things that distort and obstruct these qualities from being able to shine freely, from being able to flow freely, how we can bring these qualities directly to bear upon those fabrications, those things which are creations in the mind and also held as blockages in the body, yes, how we can bring to bear upon them. For now, we're coming near the end of our Sutta study time. That's a heads up for what we'll be looking at later on after your lunch. We'll be working with that part directly, so it's not like we just read it and pass over it and then there's nothing more to say about it. That's exactly, we're going to be zooming in on that later on. For now, let's just read the rest of this together and then go for a silent lunch and let you have time to feel, to move, also to contemplate and think about this. Eating is a very wonderful time to observe what kinds of thoughts and feelings may be there and to see whether there's a scope actually to bring in any of these qualities in our relationship with ourselves and the world with regards to the eating process. I found this really, really like deep and excellent and fruitful. So you have that opportunity coming up, and with lunch in silence, it should be like a really good, you know, hopefully not much disturbed opportunity to be able to really look, contemplate and see. So then, with happiness at heart for this fine opportunity, fine and well-supported opportunity that we have here today, the third and fourth, the final paragraphs together, and then we'll ring the bell and release you to your silent meal time together after Lulu makes a couple of announcements. Thank you very much. With love and kindness and appreciation, I will abide, pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with gladness. Likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself, I will abide, pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with gladness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. I will abide, pervading one quarter, with a mind imbued with equanimity. Likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above and below, around and everywhere, and to all as to myself, I will abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with equanimity, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. This ends our Sutta study time, and we'll be giving not the mic but the voice over to Lulu for her announcements after I depart. And then wish you good practice time with your lunch, and look forward to this time in this day-long retreat with you, this space and time of refuge, and devoted to these excellent heart qualities today. Well, hope to see you this afternoon.